let's fall in love. In Spain, the best upper sets do it. Lithuanians and let's do it. Let's do it.
And like the kind of apparently the kind of Lex Luthor is going to be like from whatever, you know, they have like different lores, comic lores or whatever. So the kind he's going to be is apparently like tattooed and used to belong to a street gang.
Yeah, I never heard of that type of Lex Luthor before.
Me neither.
It just doesn't sound
like someone comic, like he's like a self-made billionaire or something like that.
Okay.
So yeah, he's supposed to be a billionaire because of his father, and he's supposed to run a company, Luthor Corp. So he's actually a responsible person. It doesn't make sense that he was in a gang or whatever.
Okay. No. And I think this whatever storyline, he's like a self-made billionaire. Like he didn't come from money, he made it all.
So that's actually a parallel comic or something.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure if this will be the one, but that's what people are speculating.
Oh, okay.
I've read it in a couple of news sources that's the...
Would be cool though, kind of just see a very different one from the Christopher Reeve movie.
Yeah, but
like... I mean, it's Eisenberg. If it was someone else, it would have been fine. It's just, it's him with that look next to Henry Cavill. This does not make sense in my head.
And it would make more sense if it was the traditional Lex Luthor because he's smart.
That would make considerably little bit more sense. But yeah, this makes absolute bad sense.
Gangster, it just doesn't. But I still have hope. I mean, I don't wish the movie to be bad.
Me too.
Mainly because you shouldn't waste Cavill.
I want it to at least be like so bad that it's funny. I don't want it to be like torture bad. That's what I'm hoping for. You know, that's what I think.
If it goes
that way, it's fine.
Yeah. Maybe they won't take themselves too seriously. Although that's maybe hard to imagine from the first movie.
Yeah. It's considerably more dramatic than usual, so.
Yeah.
Welcome to Visitors from Across the Universe. You're listening to Across the Universe, the Chicks with Accents podcast. Namaste, I'm Nick from India and I blog at Being Norma Jean and I will be your host today. I am joined as always by Sofia, who blogs at Filmflare and is from Portugal.
Hello.
And Matt, who blogs at Lime Reviews and Strawberry Confessions and is from Germany/Denmark.
Moin.
For today's episode, which is our 20th episode, we go all lovey-dovey on you and celebrate Valentine's Day with some relatively unusual films about love. First, though, we have a very special, interesting movie of the fortnight. So join us after this trailer from a fellow Lamp Podcasting Network show.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hey, Nolan, look what everybody is saying about the lair of the unwanted.
I know. Jess and Rachel at Real Insights said, the lair is our number one favorite podcast.
Yeah, and Nick Job of Demented Podcast said, I look forward to every episode of the lair.
You know, Dylan Fields of the Lambcast says, I'm planning to get a Layer of the Unwanted tattoo across my face. I love it so much.
Yeah, and Mad Hatter of Matinee Cast said, I fucking love this podcast. I would die for it.
Yeah, Scott and Whitney at Frankly My Dear said, we got married thanks to Layer of the Unwanted.
Kai of the MILF Cast said, dude, I'm speechless. Check out the almost Lammy-nominated podcast about the best of the worst movies that's out there. Come see what the fuss is all about. Check out The Lair of the Unwanted on iTunes.
Okay, since our last episode, there have been a number of happenings in the world of cinema, but none more important and obviously devastating as the death of one of the best actors who had graced our screens in the last two decades, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Hoffman died on 2nd February at the age of 46. And it was pretty horrible. I don't think I've personally ever been as saddened by an actor's death.
Yeah.
And as soon as the news was confirmed, all of his movie roles started flashing through my head because of just generally and because of Twitter and things. And he had just done so many amazing movies and created so many unforgettable characters. So this week we have decided to dedicate interesting movies of the fortnight to him. And also that from this week onwards, we are going to try to shorten this feature and it will be more recommendation based. Okay, so I'll start. My movie was Before the Devil Knows You're Dead from 2007, directed by Sidney Lumet, starring Ethan Hawke, Marissa Tomei, Albert Finney, and of course Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's a story about two brothers who decide to rob their family shop and how it all goes very wrong. I'm not going to give more synopsis than that because it's really a film that it sort of unveils itself as you go along. And I like the film. My favorite thing about it was its structure because it's kind of like social networky, like there are lots of point of views shown, and obviously Hoffman's character, and some call it his best, but I'm going to rewatch all of his movies and then I'm going to decide on that. And there were some real life parallels with his character in the movie, which was kind of hard to watch, but overall I thought it was really entertaining and very, very intense. And you should, if you like movies about people fucking things up, this is I think you like this. So, yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet, but if you want to watch all of his movies, didn't he make 60? So you can watch.
I don't know if I'll watch the really small ones from 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm probably throughout from February and March, I'm thinking about watching all of them.
Okay.
I've made a list.
That's cool.
It's good.
Yeah, I definitely want to see this one. It's one of the big ones he's made. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Sophia.
Okay. I chose Doubt from 2008, and it with Hoffman. There's also Meryl Streep, Amy Adams, and Viola Davis. This is basically a movie about a nun who's a principal at a Catholic school, and she starts to suspect the relationship between one of the fathers, the priest that's Hoffman, and one of the kids who is new and black and is in a considerably tough position since this is the 60s and is the only black kid at that school. And this is not, I liked it a lot. I thought this is a really good movie. It won't go as one of my favorites, but I think this is one that everyone should watch, and it's not just because Hoffman is great in this. He really is. I think this is a very tough role to play. But it's just the way it talks about doubt and how you shouldn't just trust your instincts and turn your feelings towards something into facts because of how prejudice can cloud your judgment. I think that's something that everyone should watch to learn, because we see that happen so many times in real life. And it has some pretty strong imagery and thoughts, and it could help people figure out a lot of things, I think.
Yeah,
right. Because I've seen so many lives ruined by this kind of stuff. It's scary. Regardless of the truth.
I haven't seen it.
Since I am going to rewatch it, but at the moment, I think this is my favorite Hoffman performance. I loved him in Doubt. It was great.
It is. It's very nuanced. It's, you really can't, I couldn't really figure out if he was guilty or not. It's so well made. His performance is so good that you see, sometimes you're convinced that he is, at times you're not, and you, it's perfect. It's really, really good.
Okay. Yeah, I watched Boogie Nights, which is kind of an obvious choice if you're talking about, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's famous movies, but he has quite a small role in it. It's directed by Paul Thomas Anderson and stars Mark Wahlberg, Julianne Moore, and Burt Reynolds. And as you probably know, it's about the porn industry, like the professional porn industry of the 70s and 80s, and the rise and fall of a porn star, Dirk Diggler. I really thought it was a very, very funny movie that also gave me a lot of insight and information that I really did. I knew nothing. I knew that porn was popular in the 70s, but I didn't know at all that it was such a big thing.
And
when you think about something like Wolf of Wall Street, this is definitely up that alley with all the cocaine and whatnot. And Philip Seymour Hoffman, he is very brave in this movie, I think. It's a very awkward role that I don't think a big actor would have, like, done. Not even Mark Wahlberg. His character is definitely not as weird as Scotty. And he's definitely something you remember from this movie. I was very surprised by... he did have a weird role in Magnolia, for example, but this one was just very, very a standout. And I can only recommend this movie for various reasons.
Yeah. Well, I think that, yeah.
I love Boogie Nights. The thing is, like, this was, like, probably, like, his first, like, role. It was before he was a big actor, so maybe it was easier for him.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know.
Yeah, but throughout his career, I think you see a lot of tough roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I didn't care, would it be the same? Would my every prayer your name?
So, Valentine's Day, which is what, like, our main discussion is on, it is celebrated all over the world on 14th February. Our episode will come out 2 days before that, so as to hopefully maybe put everyone in the appropriate holiday kind, whatever, spirit. And I have a tradition of watching Casablanca and Bridget Jones's Diary on this day. But for our episode instead, we have chosen to focus on somewhat lesser known or less conventional love stories of cinema. We have each chosen a film and all of us will discuss them one by one. Since I'm hosting, I'll start.
License, lady?
I don't have one. I don't believe in.
How long have you been driving, lady?
Up to 45 minutes, wouldn't you say, Harold? We were hoping to start sooner, but you see, it's rather hard to find a truck.
It's your truck?
I just took it.
I chose one of my most favorite romantic films, which is Harold and Maude from 1971. It is arguably the most well-known of the films that we're talking about today because it's got a massive cult following. And, also, it's not like completely about love, I would say. It's not solely a love story. It has like a lot of other aspects to it. It's an amazing dark comedy, and it's about existential. It can be a lot about like growing up also, but I'm just going to focus on the romance bit. Harold, played by Bud Cort, is a young man obsessed with death and is like regularly orchestrating very elaborate fake suicides, mostly to annoy his overbearing mother. And Maud, played by Ruth Gordon, is a 79-year-old woman who's like really full of life, and she's very, very free-spirited. And both of them form a very unlikely bond after they meet at a funeral, because like Harold likes hanging out at funerals, obviously. And there's a lot to love about this film. I love all the aspects of it, the humor. I think the dark humor is probably like my favorite kind of humor.
Yeah,
I don't think any movie captures it as well as Harold and Maude does, and that I have seen. And even in spite of like all the morbid stuff, it's a movie about embracing life. And I've always seen Harold signifying death and Maude signifying like life, and then that both of them coming together is perfect. And as funny as I find Bud Cort and his mother, played by Vivian Pickles, I think the heart of the movie is Ruth Gordon's Maud. I forgot to count her in my like female role models list, that episode we did long back. I don't remember which number it was. But I completely forgot, because she would be. She's so full of life. She's obviously been through some stuff. There's a lot of like hints throughout the movie thrown about the kind of life she's had. But she's just so accepting and so giving, and she's so full of energy. It's very hard not to like fall in love with her. And yeah. That's it. You guys.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I've seen this a lot of times. But I always forget how funny it is. It just, there's this questionnaire scene with the mom. It's just cracking me up every time. And it's so beautiful and unusual. I mean, I've shown it to a lot of friends, and most of them were like, this is so weird. But then when they had seen like 20 minutes or so, they completely fell in love with it. And it's... Yeah, it's one of the bravest movies too, because
yeah, I can't imagine like in 70s how people must have
It's just so you don't really see it like that. You never see a movie where they actually go that far, I think, with the relationship between an old woman and a young man.
I didn't think they would go this far.
No.
Movie.
It does go very far.
It was the first time. I didn't know about this movie, actually. But it was... that's why, I mean, every time he faked killed himself, I was wondering, did it? Was it real?
Yeah.
And it was just funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love their relationship. You had to put prejudice aside while watching this. I couldn't think of...
Yeah.
Of the age difference. They just seem so good together, like kindred spirits, really.
Yeah.
It was really beautiful and very funny, very. And so unusual, really. I've never seen a movie like this.
No. And, yeah, you were saying very beautiful. I love the cinematography in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the flower, the nature scenes, also in the house, everything.
Mm-hmm.
The suicides.
It looks very suicides are awesome.
Yeah.
I love when he looks at the camera smiling after setting himself.
Yeah.
And he's so creepy, like, especially like his makeup in the beginning, he's like, he looks like death, he literally does.
Yeah.
And yeah. But, Alan, I was gonna say something else, I forgot. Shit. Okay, never mind.
Okay, I also never imagined that he would have that voice.
Yeah. And the soundtrack is great, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't listen to Cat Stevens a lot, but when I do, I always really like it. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, just that song at the ending, it's perfect, I think. fits the movie so well.
It is. It's very sad.
I was gonna say I've always thought, like, ever since I saw it, that Tim Burton must have, like, grown up on this movie. Don't you think?
He might.
Like, not so much like his more darker stuff, but, like, he does have that, like, that romantic, dark sense of things, mm-hmm. you know, because this is, like, you can, like, see the influences. And, like, I mean, nowadays I'm less into Tim Burton, but I used to love Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I'd seen this movie, I was like, I'm telling you, like, this must have inspired him. So, yeah.
Possible. Yes.
Okay, so, Sophia?
Does your husband know Alex?
No.
Does he know of him?
No.
Have I gone too far?
Yeah, maybe, but sure, no, it's fine.
Why haven't you told him?
I think once you know something like that, you can't unlearn it.
So what is it, something like that?
Yes, my movie. I chose Last Night from 2010. And what she said, I'm not sure this should put people in the mood for Valentine's Day. In fact, if you're having doubts about how you feel, you probably shouldn't watch this movie just now. But it's a movie that I love, and it's about, it was directed by Masi Tajuddin or something. She's of Iranian descent, so she has a pretty name, but it's, you know, hard to spell. It's about a couple, Joanna, who is played by Keira Knightley, and Michael, who is played by Sam Warrington, who is separated for a day. He goes on a business trip with a colleague, a coworker that he's clearly attracted to, and Joanna knows that there's something between them. While she runs into a past lover, Alex, who is played by Guillaume Canet or something.
Ryan Cotillard's boyfriend / husband.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
He's so cute, man.
Yes, he yeah.
He's always smiling. It's so cute. Okay, no. Okay, but and it's clear that they still have really deep feelings for each other. So that's the setup. For one night, they will feel the temptation to cheat on each other. You could say that it's a movie, and it is. That's the theme of the film. It's infidelity in both its forms, physical and emotional. So that will be what it's about, and that's why maybe it's not a good Valentine's Day movie. But very quickly about why I love this movie, and I think I hope you felt the same way, because I think it's just it has such a unique style, really. And in the way it tells the story, it feels very delicate and intimate every time you see it. And I don't know if you noticed, but the director also wrote the script. Mm-hmm. She's actually primarily a screenwriter.
Oh.
Yeah. It's actually a funny story how she came to do this film. I mean, not funny, but interesting. So you should watch that. And that comes across, the fact that she's a screenwriter, because this is clearly very well written. And but really, just before we discuss it, I just like to say that the thing I think works best in this movie, and where what I really appreciate about this, is the actors. And it's not just that they're good actors, because they obviously are. We know them, at least three of them. But I forgot. Her coworker is Eva Mendes, Laura. Very sexy. But not just their acting skills, but the casting themselves. Like the choice to choose each of these actors to play these characters was so well made. I mean, the chemistry between them is fantastic, and you can see that this was a carefully thought through process of casting. And she actually talks about it in an interview for Filmmaker magazine, how she came across this cast one by one, So even though, you know, we have a preconceived idea of each of them, and that, I think for me, they're like, Keira is very effeminate, she's a very feminine woman, she's very sensitive. I mean, surely you have that idea of her too, and that helps you know these characters instantly, or at least get a glimpse of them very clearly, of who they are and what their intentions are, which is crucial for me in a movie that's 1.5 hours.
Sorry.
Bless you. So yeah, I wanted to say that I love the chemistry. I think it's amazing between them. So what did you think? I mean,
I loved it too. I think I commented on one of your posts.
Yeah.
I had heard about it like when it released, I think, but then it's not a much talked about movie, so I really just forgot about it. But yeah, it's very interesting. It kind of plays with ideas about love, and can you love someone and still be attracted to other people, and should you act on that?
Exactly.
Yeah, and there's this magazine. I'm reading this German magazine, and there was a column. I don't know if it's still there, but a woman tried to have an open relationship with her boyfriend. Yeah, it just reminded me of that, kind of like, would that help or would it, you know, destroy your...
Yes, exactly. Because you a lot of people, and it's true, I mean, the filmmaker herself says that it's about, it became a story about infidelity. But I also looked at it the way you did, said, I mean, can you love two people at once, or is it different kinds of love? Because,
yeah,
you know, clearly she has feelings for both. She didn't, okay, I don't want to spoil it, but you know what I mean? You
know, yeah.
I mean.
And also, it was kind of cool that both the people they were attracted to, they kind of knew them, and it especially in Keira Knightley's character, that she had known this guy for a long time, and
yes,
it clearly wasn't only about sex or anything.
Yes, no, that's the difference, right? Hers is more emotional, cheat, while he's more sexual. And but it's interesting that Eva Mendes' character, it's still, you can still relate to her. She's not entirely, she's not bad, you know.
Yeah.
She's been cheated on, actually.
Mm.
So there's just so much to play here. Nick.
Yeah, I liked it. It was kind of like uneven for me, because I really loved the Keira Knightley Guillermo Candy story, The Sam Worthington was fine, but like, I wasn't as remotely as interested in hearing that part of the story as much as I was with the other one.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. And it was because of, like, again, like, I liked Worthington's performance. I didn't care for Eva Mendes at all. And for me, this is probably like the best performance of Keira Knightley that I've seen.
Yes.
And that was like what was like really engaging me. She was just so vivacious, and I thought she was amazing. So I was really like into that aspect of the story more. I did like the whole story. I liked like what you're saying. Like for me, I thought, like, you know, it's like, it's love and loyalty the same thing. That's what that's what came for me in the end. And I really liked the ending.
Yeah,
that I really liked. I was
me
that.
Too.
Yes,
it's a really cool ending. Yeah,
it is. Okay, but back to Keira. I agree. I think it's really nice to see her in a modern film.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
There,
we should see her in period pieces, and she actually is a very modern woman looking, I think.
And she was so loose in this. One of my issues with like Keira Knightley's always been that she always comes off a little wooden.
Uh-huh.
But in this, like, she was so like full of life. She seemed so normal, you know, like as much as you know, she looks like Keira Knightley and all that stuff, but like I found her very normal and almost relatable.
Well,
so I like that. I really liked
it. I think both of them, a storyline with Alex, it felt very real. It really felt so honest, candid. right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, candid, and I exactly.
Exact candid, that's the word. And I loved how the camera sometimes, I think it was in the restaurant scene or the bar, it just lingered on Kara while she reacted to things that people were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love all the shots of her. It's just, I think I fell in love with her in this movie. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I've always liked her a lot, but it's true, she often has that kind of role where she's kind of nervous and I don't know if restricted is the right word, but kind of stiff. But yeah, it was cool. Like, reminded me a bit of Never Let Me Go, where she is also in a modern role, and I really liked her in that.
Yeah, and just about what you said, Nick, I guess I can understand. I mean, I related, or I was more invested in the Joanna storyline. But I think both will speak differently to different people.
Yeah.
On account of, you know, who you are or what you've been through or whatever.
I like both of them.
Yeah.
And maybe because this film is so much about, like, attraction, maybe that also plays into it. Like, I wasn't attracted to those two as a couple. Maybe, I don't know, just putting it out there.
Yeah.
Maybe because I was more into these, like, Keira Knightley and Guillermo Cane, it just did not, like, the other one I got, like, why it was happening. It wasn't like I hated it, but I just kept wanting more of both of them, Keira Knightley and,
almost like a separate movie just to them. I could.
Yeah. with like their French, with their Paris background. Like,
yeah.
Exactly. It just worked so good. They worked so well together. But just about Sam Worthington, I really liked his performance here.
Yeah. Me too. It was surprising.
It was. I mean, how actually, I loved the pool scene.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Going back,
my favorite part was when when they're like fighting in the apartment,
yeah,
and he like randomly starts searching for the charger,
yeah,
and he's like in his shorts. It was so cute. I thought, because it was just so like it was so sincere, like it just felt like, you know, he wasn't acting, he felt so normal over there. I found that really I liked how real he was, also.
It was,
yeah,
I really liked him.
The whole thing. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Matt.
I'm mistaken. I'm not sure I can teach you.
Was I too rude? I can apologize.
I'm not sure I have the right feelings towards women. I'm suspicious of my feelings.
Do you not like me?
I'm attracted to you without knowing why. All women confuse me, even my mother.
My movie is the film Bright Star from 2009, also directed by a female. That's kind of a coincidence, Jane Campion. And this was always in my top 100 movies since I've watched it, because it was one of those films that I watched when I started getting interested in cinema. And I never rewatched it. But yeah, it stars Ben Whishaw as John Keats, the poet, and Abbie Cornish as Fanny Braun, his love interest. And it's kind of about how they meet and fall in love, and how it's all very, very tragic in a romantic kind of way, I guess. And Abbie Corn, or Fanny, is a fashion designer, so she's more like pragmatic, and she's a modern woman for her time. But she starts getting interest in poetry and really helps Keats write his best poems, or kind of serves as the inspiration for them as well. What I loved about this movie always was how beautiful it was and how kind of layered and the poetry that is used in it, bits and parts, and even the dialogue is almost sounds like poetry, a lot of it. I used to listen to the soundtracks where there are lots of the dialogues from the movie, so
yeah.
I could almost talk along with some of the scenes. I was kind of afraid to rewatch this because I loved it so much. And rewatching it, I didn't love it as much as the first time because I guess it makes sense for a 15-year-old me to love it like completely. This time, maybe I was just in a different set of mind, but some of the scenes were just like a bit too much for me, a bit too romantic, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But I still liked it a lot.
It's the opposite for me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too.
Yeah, because I liked it the first time I watched it, and I think at that point I thought it was too romantic. But like now when I watched it, I was just like, it's so perfect, it's so... It's the most, I think, cinematic and like the most conventional love story that we've chosen.
Yeah.
Of the three. It's very, very, like, you know, I mean, obviously, like, it did happen, but like, it is like a very movie love story, you know?
Mm.
And yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Sophia.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that I had tried to watch this movie once.
Okay.
I may have watched like the first 15 minutes, but I just couldn't get into it, and that's why I considered this my first watch. So it was the reverse process for me. Because I liked it a lot, but I think I need to see it again because there's so much deep, meaningful poetry in this, and it can be really hard to catch it. I think you need to read it like in the book first,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I don't know, I never studied poetry per se, but when I did, like in school, it takes me a while to get into it. Like I need to reread it lots and lots of times to understand.
Yeah, I love poetry and I love John Keats, and I try to write poetry myself. I'm probably not good at it, but just kind of the structure and the screenplay maybe was more where my problem was, just how their love story evolved and all the letters.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
You know, it can be a thing of the times too.
Yeah, I probably.
But there's a sense of dramatic that may be a little too much, like a lot of emotion. But I like that. And I especially like the scenes where they were together, like in the sofa, and he was completely leaning on her. But it felt so, I don't know, he's so sensitive. But I like that.
Ben Whishaw was like born to play John Keats. You know?
Yeah.
No one else could have played him. No one else. He's got that, like, especially, I've always loved his voice. There's something about his voice which has like that emotion in it, but then it's just all of him, you know? And even she, I don't think I liked her that much the first time I saw it, but this time I really liked her, especially I like how like sort of snappy she is.
Mm-hmm. I love her. Fun. She's very underrated. I think Abby Cornish.
Yeah.
And the scene at the end where she completely freaks out. It's really good.
It's just like that I really remember like loving. No, and I think cuz she looks kind of older to me.
Mm-hmm.
So like she kept looking old. Even though Fanny Burney was like 18. No, wrong person, my bad. Fanny Brawn was 18 when when they met and stuff. So but, like, I don't know, she looks older to me, so I kept getting, like, maybe that kind of, like, distanced me the first time, because I couldn't, but this time it's just, they're so in love, and it's so beautiful, like, the lighting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Just the way, like, you could almost feel the wind
mm-hmm.
just by watching it, you know, the way, like, the curtains blow and this and that, and the music, of course.
Yeah, and
really, that I really liked it this time.
There's that scene where they're leaning to the walls, you know,
uh-huh.
And
yeah.
There's that in Doctor Who as well.
Exactly,
it just makes me sad every time. But what another thing I was thinking maybe distracted me this time was when I watched it, I was just so in love with Ben Whishaw, and absolutely. And now that I know that he's gay, I know it shouldn't change anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was just lamenting to my friend. I was like, why is he gay? He's so pretty. Like, why?
Yeah. But I was kind of always thinking whether he enjoyed actually kissing her or maybe he actually hated it. So.
Yeah. Oh, I think he's too professional to like.
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
No, but it's interesting because I'm watching Pushing Daisies now.
Oh.
And
yeah.
Also gay. And I was thinking, oh, how fortunate that he doesn't have to touch her.
That was sad finding out. I was so in love with the pie makeup.
Although it made sense, because when I watched The Hobbit, I was like, he can't be not gay.
It makes sense with Ben Whishaw also.
Yeah.
He's too delicate.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it was so good here.
Yeah. He fit really well. And also, Thomas Brodie's Sangsters, he plays the little boy, Samuel.
Yeah.
I really like him. I always liked him in, like, Love Actually.
He's in Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And he's going to be in The Maze Runner, which I haven't read yet, but I'm going to read that. And
well, it's got Styles from Teen Wolf. I will watch it for Styles from Teen Wolf. Yeah. I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to watch it.
Oh, and just another last kind of thing. We're talking about periodical movies winning the Oscar for costume design.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was also nominated. And I think it makes sense for like movies like this because it actually is about fashion in some aspects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just, but that still makes me angry when, you know, other movies aren't nominated.
Yeah.
I really do not like that. I mean, it's obviously it's like period setting, but I really don't like those clothes. I bet it was like a bitch to wear them, but I like the big fluffy gowns. These just look like 90s to me. Whatever.
I like these. I like the men's wear at least.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the men's wear, yeah.
I didn't like exactly like her fashion.
Yeah. Exactly.
It felt very costumey.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Especially the pink one. It's just
too pink. And it's kind of unfortunate because you don't really see the waist, and then it's kind of like weird.
That's what.
But I used to love this fashion. I just
people change.
Not anymore.
Okay, so with that, we come to an end to our discussion on unusual love stories in cinema. Plugs, guys?
Yeah, I do have. I have two plugs. The first one is related to Philip Seymour Hoffman. I already linked it in my links post, but I think I should do it here too. It's supposed to buy Men Repeller. I don't know if you know the blogger. She's a fashion blogger, but she's really funny.
No.
It's really funny because it's not just about fashion. It's actually how to repel men. It's really funny. But she wrote sort of repel men through weird fashion sense. She wrote a funny, very loving story about how she met him, the actor,
mm-hmm.
Hoffman. I mean, briefly. But it's really, it makes you smile, I think. It's a fun way to remember. It's really funny. And you think, yeah, that's exactly what he would say. I'm not spoiling it. That's why I'm not giving you details. But yeah.
Okay.
And it's called Trail He Leaves Behind, so that you can search it. The other one is Sat Disposed from Cinematic Corner. Did you see her appreciation for Tom Hiddleston?
No.
I didn't see it. I started it. My internet's so awful that like half the pictures won't load. It's like torturing me.
Because I wasn't really a fan, but when I started reading her post and watching all those gifts, I was like, there was a fangirl being born inside me that moment.
Have you read the Elle interview? Like they did like this feature on him.
No.
Have you read
the one
it?
You linked?
Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah. I have bookmarked. And I haven't, but I'm going to read it, really.
Because it's like it's written, I'm pretty sure like women just meet him and they just turn into fangirls. So they just like see his whatever and they turn into fangirls. It's written, but it's crazy how much the interviewer is fangirling over him it literally ends with pretty darn hot or something like that. Okay. So and it just goes on like how he's really charming and he's tall and courageous and sincere and some crap like that. Okay. Which I'm sure it's true, but it's like it's really funny that it's like in like a proper like I guess professional magazine.
Yeah.
That you're just like losing it over this guy.
It ruins like every man for you, seriously.
It has
well actually
it's true,
any actor does
men
that.
Repelling just like
no he's men repelling, yeah, but he's no, it's different. It's not every actor.
Yes, he's like making actors look worse, you know. He just
yeah,
weird.
It's true.
Exactly.
It's insane.
Yeah, I almost fear that it's not true because it's too good. I mean,
it's too good, right?
It is.
I also have two plugs. The first one is also kind of related to our last episode. It's this site, I think I found it from you, Nick. It's called Taste of Cinema.
Okay.
I think you liked it, and then I just kind of looked it up. And someone wrote a post called 12 Reasons Why The Wolf of Wall Street Should Win Best Picture. So, yeah, that's very interesting. He doesn't say that it will win or, like, it has any chance, but it's a pretty cool article. And the second one is I finally finished the episode for We Sing Poorly, the podcast about Beauty and the Beast. So yeah, you can listen to me sing very badly about Beauty and the Beast.
Is it up?
Yeah, you can check it out. It's at, I think they're on Podomatic and also on yourfaceisa.com.
Okay.
Oh, and my sister and me, we uploaded a new video to our YouTube channel, finally. It's kind of a spoof on not having a good camera and like stuff like that, and you can check it out at We Wants It All. Just type that into YouTube. That's the channel name. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have plugs. Once again, I am Nick, and I blog at beingnormajean.blogspot.com, and you can find me on Twitter at nikhat_z.
And I'm Sophia. I blog at filmflare.pt, and you can find me on Twitter under filmflareblog.
I'm Matt. You can find my blog at limereviews.blogspot.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Matt Kowalski.
You can listen to our podcast on any of our sites or on Podomatic and iTunes. You just have to search for Across the Universe Podcast. You can send us your comments on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/AcrossTheUniversePodcast. So you can send us an email at our email ID, which is AcrossTheUniversePodcast@gmail.com. On our next episode, The Vaughn is going to join us, and we are all going to talk about our favorite comedy movies. So see you then. Bye.
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 drops rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass, they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing me.